won't be long now. The stolen seat, the theft, the heist complete, and the ramming down our throats of the 113th Supreme Court justice will be complete. And again, I go back to this idea that, you know, how long did we go without anyone on the court? I think it was early February when Scalia passed away last year, and nothing for the entire year. We then end up with a guy who, in just a little over 2 months, which the whole process is through, we've destroyed the Senate, and we've rammed him through. Mission accomplished. Well, if you're a Republican anyway. Here to talk about that and, well, whatever else we can bang around, our good friend Isaiah Poole. He's a communications director there at People's Action. Isaiah, thanks for taking time for us.
I appreciate it.
So the Grand Theft SCOTUS, almost complete.
Almost complete. You know, as of about 11:35, the vote is proceeding, and it's expected to be Gorsuch would be confirmed with a solid block of Republican votes and perhaps three or four Democratic votes. But you said at the open that this was rammed down the throat of the public, and that is exactly what happened. We had something unprecedented happen, as you mentioned, during the last Congress, when President Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court, after Justice Scalia died, could not even get a committee hearing. And it was the only reason was that they created this rule that said that we don't vote on presidential nominees during some unspecified period before an election, something which was never done before. And so now we've come to this point where the Republicans made it clear that Neil Gorsuch would be on the Supreme Court no matter what.
It's amazing to me. And again, you know, you look at the messaging coming out of the right wing and you go, we've never confirmed a justice during an election year. And yet you've got Anthony Kennedy sitting there on the bench. You know, all of what, you know, we've never had a filibuster. Yeah, because you've never had a candidate, someone who couldn't get to 60 votes outside of Robert Bork. And, you know, that was a whole different scenario.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it is, you know, the fundamental reality is I think the Democrats really do have the high ground on this one. Number one, their argument was that the Supreme Court is, because of its role in really interpreting and enforcing the Constitution for all of us, regardless of where we are on the political spectrum, it behooves us to have people on the court who are not ideological extremists. And Gorsuch is a product of ideological extremism promoted by the right of the right, with millions of dollars of promotion and advertising.
Oh, yeah.
And lobbying to push him onto the court.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, as soon as the hearings had completed and the gavel went down, you know, CNN was just inundated with, you know, call your senator and you make sure that they vote for Gorsuch. It's just the money. You could see the money just flowing into pushing him onto the court because they understand. And again, I go back to something my grandfather always said. If a rich guy is going to tell you, spend a buck to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it because they understand return on investment. So I look at all of this rich people money going into saying, yeah, we want Gorsuch. And you go, what's the payoff? What's the return on their investment?
Exactly right. And, you know, so I think, again, as I said before, the Democrats and progressives have really done an excellent job of laying this out before the public. It's tragic that it's come to this, that, you know, it's for the foreseeable future now. We will have a Republican Party that now has free rein and has made it clear that it wants free reign, to put on the court extremists who are not representative of the mainstream of judicial thought. The only thing that we can do now is really make clear the consequences. And the consequences are going to be quite dire in terms of the rights of ordinary people in this country.
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier, we're basically going back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s and not the 1980s and 90s.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, you know, it's back to the era of robber barons and, you know, where corporations could run roughshod over workers and consumers. I mean, we've seen that pattern in the actions that the executive orders that the Trump administration has signed. We've seen that in the laws that have come out so far this year from the Republican Congress that have loosened all sorts of regulations and stripped all sorts of consumer protections away from us. You know, we're going to go into a fight very, very soon over the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which has been in the target hairs of the conservative majority in Congress ever since it was created. We've already seen what has happened with Congress deciding that your internet service provider can take your personal information and your browsing habits and sell it to the highest bidder. I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, I mean, we're moving towards a really scary world. And again, it's back to what you said there a minute ago. You know, the robber barons are going to rule the roost. Corporate titans, the masters of industry, there's going to be them. And then everyone else, all the rest of us, desperation, poverty, you know, all of that stuff. We are going to, you know, I go back to 2004 and John Edwards with the Two Americas frame. Here it is, right in front of us.
Right. And, you know, the tragedy is that there are those of the Supreme Court, when you talk about the Supreme Court during an election campaign, the thought is that that is not a thing that animates voters. You know, the kind of and character of the people that get on the Supreme Court, which is very dependent on who is in the White House, because that's where the nominations start. But we're seeing now the consequence of not pondering seriously what it means when you put someone like a Donald Trump in the executive office, and then he gets to be the one who fills the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and then the Supreme Court who will decide on what's constitutional and what isn't. And exactly. I look today, I mean, the big news today, obviously, is the attack last night. Where, you know, the president shot off, you know, some 60 Tomahawk missiles. You've got someone like Rand Paul coming out and saying that's unconstitutional. I look at this, you know, as, you know, the potential of, you know, he's appointed the Supreme Court justice, and that's the guy who's going to decide whether, you know, his unilateral action, his you know, unitary executive presidency is constitutional or not.
Well, yeah. That's actually a very good example because, you know, the war powers, there's been this roiling controversy over the limits of the War Powers Act now for decades. You know, I don't know whether that will come to a head in some manner at the Supreme Court, but that's a very consequential issue. How much latitude does a president have to attack another country?
Because I'm saying right now, we've just started a war, Isaiah. I mean, it is what it is. That's the first shot because no one attacked us.
And the thing about this that disturbs me most is that this is a Fox News provocation. And by that, I mean that this is, as far as I can tell, from all the commentary that I've seen and read, it's the president, as many of us have, seeing those images on television and having a visceral reaction and then ordering a strike.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Isaiah, I had a visceral reaction. I would want a strike. I mean, to be honest.
Well, but that's my point. My point is that this is not a situation where a president has sat down and thought about, put this in the context of a strategic thought about how we should be operating in the world, how we should, you know, what is our, when do we use military force? When do we use, you know, other tools? And what our obligation is when we see these kinds of atrocities around the world. This is just a shiny object that came across his view. And he, because he saw this shiny object, decided to do a 180-degree turn from his previous position, which was what goes on in Syria is Syria's business, but not necessarily ours.
Yeah. And no, that's a huge point beyond all of the other static. The fact that so quickly he can do an about face.
Right. Which shows how shallow his intellectual roots are.
Now, can you say from the other side of this that that might be a good thing? Because, you know, there are reports that Bannon and Priebus are on their way out. They're looking at bringing in a new, you know, couple of people for a couple more months before they can them. You know, could that be something that we could use to our advantage?
I don't know. I mean, it astounds me that we have Jared Kushner, who is Secretary of State, and secretary of a whole bunch of other things, and he's there virtue of the fact that he's the son-in-law.
Yeah, did you see the picture that he took in Iraq, you know, with the preppy outfit on, with the vest on over top of it? And you go, really, you're going to go into a war zone looking like a preppy walking down the streets of New York?
And we made fun years ago of Michael Dukakis in the tank outfit. Yeah. I mean, but look how far we've come.
It's just amazing stuff. But last question I've got for you, you know, in moving forward in this stuff, because, look, there's a lot of distraction being thrown at us, a lot of things we've got to be paying attention to. What are you looking at over the next couple of days?
Well, the budget, and I think really, in a way, what we heard this morning about the unemployment, Friday morning, about the unemployment rate, which was down to 4.5%. But there are signs that these, you know, the 100,000 plus, 150,000 plus monthly job growth leaps are slowing down. Interest rates are going up. The economy will slow, and the attention in normally would be to say, look, even though overall the economy looks good, the job picture looks good, we have stubborn pockets of poverty, whether it's in the heart of Trump country in these small towns and rural areas, especially in the Deep South, or in cities like Baltimore and Detroit and parts of Philly, parts of L.A., where, you know, we still have serious problems with unemployment combined with rising housing costs and so on. Bottom line is this budget that's coming down the pipeline is going to obliterate virtually every tool we have in the toolbox to fix the residual problems of economy that's still leaving people behind. And so we've got to bring attention to that. In a few weeks, the Progressive Caucus will come up with an alternative budget, an alternative vision. We got to push that and hold Congress accountable and the Trump administration accountable for what they're about to do.
Yeah, I'm with you.
What they're talking about doing.
Good stuff. And then we'll keep up on that. Next time you come back, we can maybe bang that around a bit.
Okay.
Appreciate it, Isaiah. Always great talking with you.
Appreciate it.
Our good friend Isaiah Poole, communications director there at People's Action. You want to check out their website. Big conference coming up. You're going to want to not miss. Go to thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
So that's how it is. That's what we got. If the president wants to admit it or not, you can read it in the paper, read it on the wall, hear it on the wind if you're listening at all. Get out of that limo. us in the eye, call us on a cell phone, tell us all why, in Dayton, Ohio, or Portland, Maine, or a cotton gin out on the great high plains that's done closed down, along with the school and the hospital and the swimming pool. Dust devils dance in the noonday heat, there's rats in the alley and trash in the street, gang graffiti on a boxcar door. We can't make it here.